of the count, there are always at least a few cases, and there will be at least a few that will come up this time. So in the you may receive questions from cities and counties on that, and I can certainly provide a brief explanation of that process for you, so that in case you do receive questions, you have a response available to you.
Mr. Glaspie, that would be helpful. As you know, we've already been contacted by one community that has concerns about that, and as I understand that doesn't impact the numbers that we're working with for 2010 redistricting. What the numbers that we have is what we have to work with, correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair. For issues of things like boundaries and things like that, it is possible for the House and Senate to agree on making a boundary adjustment or something like that. We're aware that there's a potential boundary problem in Le Sueur that might involve a few people and crosses a county boundary. This is one that we tried to get corrected before the census, and somehow in the process it didn't happen. And so that's one that I think is fairly understandable and fairly straightforward that would be possible to make a joint agreement on.
Great, and thank you, Mr. Glaspie. Just for a moment here, we're going to call the meeting to order. We have minutes from the March 21st, 2011 meeting. Do I have someone who will move those, please?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Fabian moves the minutes from March 21st, 2011. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The minutes for March 21st, 2011 have been passed. Mr. Glaspie, if you want to proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had received the total count of population in the state at the end of December, and then in early March, early this month, we received the more detailed count by city, township, county, school district, legislative district, congressional district, all the way down to a census block area. We have discussed the general pattern of population change, and this was borne out in the actual final count. That there is a ring of counties around the Twin City metropolitan area that has grown very, very rapidly. The most rapidly growing county in Minnesota last decade was Scott County, increasing by about 45%, followed by Wright and Sherburne counties, growing by 37-39%. Growing very, very rapidly over the decade. The biggest declines were in Swift County in western Minnesota, losing about 18% of its population. Traverse County losing about 14%, also just west of Swift County. And in Kitson County in the very northwest portion of the state, declining in population by about 14%. In general, The southwest and northwest areas of the state, followed by the northeast and southeast portions of the state, grew most slowly or declined most, with the area around the Twin Cities, particularly from the St. Cloud area through the Twin Cities to Rochester area, experiencing the largest gains. But the center cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul did decline. Minneapolis essentially stayed the same in population. Very little change in population in the city of Minneapolis.
Mr. Glaspie, if I could interrupt you for a moment. Sure. Representative Fabian has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Glaspie, I'm just curious. I live obviously in the corner of the state, and you mentioned the Four Corners briefly. What do you anticipate gaze into your crystal ball for the next 10 years?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, our forecast particularly for counties such as Kitson and Marshall and also to some degree Kuching, but also along the western border, is that many of these counties have experienced very long-term population decline and are now quite old in average age, and so there doesn't appear to be a lot of potential for turnaround in that. Counties such as Roseau and Lake of the Woods, however, have been heavily related to manufacturing and in part the population change in those counties in particular is directly related to manufacturing. For Roseau, the fortunes of a couple manufacturing firms really influenced the growth or lack of growth in Roseau County.
Representative Fabian.
Thanks.
Mr. Glaspie.
Some people talk about the rings around the Twin Cities, and if we think about the core cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and then surround them with the remainder of their counties. The rest of Hennepin County outside of Minneapolis grew modestly by about 5% over the last decade. That is slower than the total state growth of 7.8%. Ramsey County, being pretty much fully developed wall to wall in the county, declined just slightly, essentially no change. Anoka, Dakota, Carver, Scott, and Washington counties combined for a 17% increase in population, substantially faster than the overall state population growth. And Sherburn, Wright, Isanti, and Chisago, that very rapid growth donut around the Twin Cities, grew by more than 30%, 34% over the decade. The remainder of the state, on average, increased by about 4.8%.
Mr. Glaspie, you know, given the growth that we're seeing there, are you anticipating that donut hole will keep getting larger? And
Madam Chair, the recession in the housing market has had some real impact in recent population change in this rapidly growing area. This is also the area where most of the new mortgages are. And that has led to a situation where there are more mortgages in question or in transition at this time. The growth in Sherburn, Wright, Isanti, and Chisago counties, as well as Scott and Carver counties, has been greatly slowed in the last 4 years. In part because of the housing market, followed by the recession. People simply aren't moving much right now, and their growth was largely dependent on migration of folks into newly developed areas. That has really slowed down. The question that we have now is whether that is going to rebound after the recession is fully recovered and after the housing market is fully recovered, or is that a new state of permanent affairs that we may see a much slower rate of growth. At this time, the counties of Sherburn, Wright, Isanti, and Chisago are growing at roughly the same rate as Hennepin and Ramsey counties, about 1% a year.
And Mr. Glaspie, I'm guessing from those kind of estimates that we can anticipate that Minneapolis and St. Paul will shrink if the housing market doesn't change either.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, one of the questions is if this is a permanent state of affairs, and if people quit moving outward and begin to move back inward, where will that movement back inward take place? It could, some of that movement could take place in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Other in the inner ring suburbs or within the area around the Beltway would be the most likely area where we would see a resurgence of growth. That would also likely be highly related to an aging population of rapid growth in the number of families that are empty nester families, and for those families. living further out would be less attractive, and living closer in and more accessible with lower maintenance would be probably a bit more attractive. So
right now it's
a real question mark as mm-hmm. to whether or not this outward expansion is going to resume with full recovery, or will this be the beginning of a very new kind of market going forward into the future.
Thank you, Ms. Glaspie. It'll be interesting to see, given that it's kind of going the opposite direction right now. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, this conversation in the last couple of questions has pointed out, I think, a discussion that you and I had after our last meeting, which is, just to reiterate, the growth in the population rate of those counties that were growing 34.4% has dropped down to 1%, and it's about the same as the growth rate in the inner cities or in the cities right now. And so I think it's an interesting thing to note, that demographic change from the time of the census to these several years later. And the question is, will it continue? But I'm glad we have that margin. It says to me that margin of plus or minus 2 is a really important thing for us to keep in mind, Madam Chair, as we go forward, because now we have something up there that is not true anymore in terms of the rapid growth rate in those counties, and it's more equal to the it's equal now, or equalized to what's happening in the city. So it's just an important concept. It was important for me to grasp that, and I think it's important for the committee to be reminded of that too.
Well, that'll be for a conversation later, but thank you, Mr. Glaspie. If you want to proceed, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we look at major metropolitan areas around the state, most of our metropolitan areas grew by a fairly rapid pace. Fargo-Moorhead area, the Minnesota portion only, increased by more than 15% last decade. St. Cloud and Rochester both by approximately 13-14%, and the North Mankato metropolitan area, which is a new metropolitan area that was added this last decade, grew by nearly 13% over the decade. The Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area increased by about 10%. Duluth-Superior, the Minnesota portion of the Duluth-Superior metropolitan area, increased more slowly, but did increase, and that includes all of St. Louis County. So that's it's not just Duluth City; it includes a much larger area. And the Grand Forks metropolitan area, which includes the city of East Grand Forks, grew by just a little bit, but it did in fact grow, and that's a turnaround from past decades. The Minnesota also changed in its racial and ethnic characteristic. And we saw rapid growth in the Hispanic or Latino population, growing by about 75% over the decade. The Black or African American population grew by approximately 60%, and the Asian population and the population of people of two or more races grew by about 50% over the decade. Representing the bulk of growth in Minnesota, approximately two-thirds of the total growth in Minnesota occurred in the minority populations. The county with the largest minority population to date and proportionally is Ramsey County at 33%, followed by Nobles County in southwestern Minnesota at 32.8, nearly 33%. Both of those are counties are beginning to come very close to the national average in minority representation. Hennepin County was third at 28%. The counties with the lowest proportions were Big Stone, Fillmore, and Kitson. In general, western, northwestern, and southern Minnesota in general has lower percent minority population, but Nobles County demonstrates that in some areas we have very high proportions, largely related to particular employers, and their future would certainly say much about the future of the minority populations in those areas. The congressional the population counts by congressional district were very close to what we had anticipated. There were some slight differences. Our estimates had shown that congressional district 8 would be a little bit further away. We were estimating it would be fairly close, but as it turns out, it's really pretty close to the equal population size. We had anticipated that congressional district 3 would be a little bit closer. There's a bit more of a variance, but by and large, the general configuration is what we had estimated, is that District 6 and District 2, the North Suburban and South Suburban congressional districts, are substantially larger than the equal population size. The two Central City districts and District 7 are the smallest districts and substantially below the equal population size, and District 1 is also to a degree smaller than the equal population size in the state.
Mr. Glaspie, Representative Scott has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here this morning, Mr. Glaspie. I was just looking at an old handout on the estimates, and since we're kind of on the screen of the actual numbers, and these are kind of hard to see, but I know in my own district, there was an estimate, I think it was about 500 fewer people, and the final numbers were off. And I'm just wondering, as you get closer to other areas like Rochester and those areas, the estimates were, there's a little more discrepancy.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering what the explanation might be for those discrepancies.
Mr. Glaspie.
Madam Chair, the estimates that we make, particularly of legislative districts, are based upon our annual estimates of city and township population, and that works fairly well for most places of the state, but for areas, particularly in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester, Duluth, St. Cloud, that areas where there are multiple districts within a city, we don't really have a way of subdividing that, and we know that that's a potential problematic issue in terms of the estimates. I'm going to talk just a little bit about the estimates by legislative district, by House district, which I think will further reinforce that. But we've known that is a potential problem. It shows up mostly in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but also to a degree in some of the other larger cities in the state.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you.
Mr. Glaspie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did produce a similar map using the estimates, but this is a map now of the Minnesota House districts with the 2010 population deviations from equal population shown. The darkest green areas of this map are areas that are substantially larger than the equal population size, more than 25% over the equal population size. The darkest brown areas are areas that are more than 10% under the equal population size, and the yellow, the districts in yellow, are the districts that are within plus or minus 2%. As you can see, there's not a lot of districts that are within plus or minus 2%, but there are some that are relatively equal in population size. Most of the areas that have the largest districts right now, again, are in that suburban ring, exurban ring around the Twin Cities. The areas with the smallest districts tend to be in the central cities, the southwest, and the northwest portions of the state. And this is the central city view of the same thing. Smallest and largest districts in the state in the 2010 count, the smallest districts, again, are mostly in the southwest portions of the state and in the central cities. 20A, as we had anticipated, is the smallest district in the state with 32,000, a little bit over 32,000 people. The largest district is 35A in Scott County with nearly 60,000 population. And there's about an 86% difference between the largest and the smallest. It's not quite two for one, but it's beginning to approach double size of the smallest district. Again, the most rapidly growing districts have occurred in the rapid suburbanizing ring around the Twin Cities in Dakota, Sherburne, Northwest Hennepin County, Wright County, and Scott County are areas that have grown very, very rapidly, and the districts in those areas are substantially larger than equal population size. The smallest districts are in Southwest Minnesota and in Minneapolis and St. Paul, with District 41B, and also in Bloomington in a more developed area of the city of Bloomington. And the districts with the highest percent minority populations, we have in Minnesota 10 House districts with a majority of minority persons. Over 50% of the population is people of minority race or ethnicity. District 65A in St. Paul has the highest proportion with nearly 73%, followed by District 58B in Minneapolis at nearly 70%. The southern, southwestern, and to some degree central portion of Minnesota has the lowest percent minority, with District 31B in southeast portion of the state at 2.7%, followed by 12B, which is in central Minnesota in the Brainerd, Morrison area, with 3.2% of the population of minority race or ethnicity. So we see very large differences in the racial and ethnic characteristics of districts as well.
Mr. Gillespie, can you tell me of the 10 House districts that you said have a minority-majority status, as that's based on the current boundaries, correct?
That is, Madam Chair, that is correct. That is based upon the census count with the current boundaries.
And Representative Fabian, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gillespie, during your opening comments, you made reference to quite a bit of information that you have with regards to the populations, and I think you mentioned counties and cities and school districts and so forth. Is that information that you're going to make available to us?
Mr. Gillespie.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, we have been frantically trying to get that up on our website. The Census Bureau has a way of serving that information up, but there's been a tremendous amount of confusion over that. They decided right at the last minute to introduce an entirely new interface, and almost nobody knows how to use that. And so what we have done is we've tried to put up every kind of spreadsheet file that we can to make access easier. So we have one for school districts and for cities and townships and for cities and for legislative districts, congressional. So we've tried to put up as many as possible, and I can certainly make available to the members of the committee any of the spreadsheets that you wish, or information on specific areas of the state. At the same time, Mr. Miller in the Legislative GIS office is organizing the data, working with the software firm that we've contracted with for redistricting software to get the information organized for redistricting purposes, so that you can begin to draw districts and using the lowest level of information at the block level.
Great. Representative Clark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to think about how to think about information that's updated versus information that's not updated, and how we can access some of that information. So I know that the census has a responsibility to do updates from time to time, and it sounds like in terms of understanding these growth rates, for example, I mean, you have to understand that a 34% growth rate on the census is now down to about a 1% growth rate. I'm trying to understand how to think about that, and Madam Chair, I guess it's a question for the committee to think about as we go along too, but I'm just wondering, can we have access to the data that shows the changes that we do know about through your agency? Is that how do we access that is what I want to ask. That's my first question, then I do have another one.
Mr. Gillespie.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, we make annual estimates of county, city, and township population, as does the Census Bureau. We're also trying to continuously update information on things like group facilities. We're collecting data right now on nursing homes and prisons and other kinds of group facilities, which is also an important component of population. For example, in Swift County, which includes Appleton, mm-hmm. one of the reasons why they declined in population was that the Prairie Correctional Facility has been closed. And that resulted in a substantial loss of population in Swift County. So we do have regular updates of information, and we do post that. The magnitudes of the information, the number of numbers, becomes a problem for many people. So if I can be of any assistance and provide whatever numbers that we can provide to you, I'll be more than happy to do that. Otherwise, it's just such a massive number of numbers that it's easy to get lost.
Thank you. And
Representative Clark.
Madam Chair, maybe that's one thing we can figure out, how to keep the committee apprised of the annual update. So you would have had, you'd be on your second annual update. Now you've done one, and then another one will be done. When do those get completed?
Mr. Gillespie.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, the population estimates tend to lag 1 year. So right now, officially the estimates are being made for 2010, and that becomes sort of a rebasing period since we have the 2010 census results. Next summer, a year from now, we will have the 2011 estimates. But in the meantime, we will begin to get information on short-run changes in population that will help us better understand the current events. There, as you might imagine, the impact of the Great Recession, as well as the housing market and dramatic changes in our age structure that have all happened really within the last 3 years, this is a time of rather substantial change, and we're struggling to keep up with the nature of the changes, but I'll be happy to relay any information that we have.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just the
Representative Clark.
The question that flows from that is one I think you're alluding to. I haven't heard the actual word, but a lot of the reason for the change in growth rate, both down and up, has to do with foreclosures, I understand. And so the foreclosures that have happened with many of the new homes that were purchased in some of the outer fast-growing areas, which have now been foreclosed, and then the foreclosures in the inner cities, which are now being reoccupied, those numbers, I think, are ones that... I'm not sure. I have seen maps of foreclosures, and maybe it's something in other committees. Maybe it's something we can share with this committee. But it is a question. And one of the things that came up yesterday, we were talking a lot about tax policy related to homeowners and to renters. And I think it would be very interesting. I was able to get kind of at the end of the some of the discussion a listing of renters in each area. And I know it came from the data of the census. And that has that been updated since the census was taken, or is that
Mr. Gillespie?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, the information on foreclosures largely comes from the financial institutions, and And there is some updating of that. The Federal Reserve Bank has information on different stages of the foreclosing process, mortgages that are behind and mortgages that have in which actions have proceeded, and that information is available, I believe, at the county level. I'm not sure that it's at the city level, but I can certainly check on that.
Mr. Glaspie, when you do that, can you also find out if those are, do they have the data as whether or not that's owner-occupied or if these are just being purchased for other purposes?
Madam Chair, I'll certainly see information I can find.
That'd be great. And you know what, members, as we look at this, you know, when we are using the 2010 numbers, that's based on real data that we have versus estimates, and I think that's key for maintaining the integrity of this process. So, any other questions, members? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, on that point, and Mr. Glaspie, if there's new data that comes through, can we use that when we're drawing our maps? If it's not available to everybody, or if it didn't come from the census people?
Mr. Glaspie, I'll let you go ahead.
Madam Chair, Mr. Gehring probably can give you a better sense of that. But it is my understanding that in the final analysis, when we compare plans against variance and contiguity and compactness and things like that, that all that is within the official census data release. So that is extraneous information would not be added into that. However, the people drawing the districts certainly are aware of things that are happening within their area. So within that constraint, that information may help inform the process. But I believe the redistricting process, and Mr. Gehring, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the redistricting process is fairly well constrained within the official data release.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Madam Chair, can Mr. Gehring clarify?
Mr. Gehring, can you verify that that's the case?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, that's the case. I mean, there are some states, Minnesota hasn't been one, that have used alternative data other than just the U.S. Census data in doing their redistricting. I think the state of Kansas in the past has conducted their own type of census that they've used. But in Minnesota, historically, we've used and constrained our redistricting to just U.S. Census data.
Members, any other questions? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Gillespie, I'm not sure. I'm assuming all the slides that we have here are on the website. Is that correct or not? I can't read any of these. They're so small. Even if I was 10, I don't think that I could read them and with my eyes. But I would just like to see it on a bigger scale so I can really see the numbers better. Thanks.
Mr. Gillespie, I think it's early in the morning, too, for a lot of us right now. I'm having trouble as well.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I will make all the slides available to Mr. Freeman, and the maps are available on the legislative GIS site, at least the congressional and legislative district maps. And I agree, it probably is too early in the morning to be seeing such small numbers. I do want to mention, I think I failed to mention, that I also provided a list that actually comes from one of those spreadsheets of the House districts in Minnesota, the 2010 population. The deviation from equal population, percent deviation, and percent minority population for each of the legislative districts in Minnesota.
Members, any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Glass. Oh, Representative Murphy.
I just do. Madam Chair, Mr. Gillespie, what happens if we... Let me start again. We've received a couple letters from cities that says that they're sure that there's something wrong with their numbers. And we've received... I've had received conversations from various members that are sure that there's some mistakes. So I refer them to Ms. Tincture, but what happens when they get to you?
Mr. Glaspie.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the Census Bureau has a formal process called the Count Question Resolution, or CQR, that begins in June, on June 1st, and lasts for 2 years, and it is an opportunity for local units of government to question the census. There are parameters within this, and I will be sending out a letter in probably in June or early July, depending on the budget situation, to all the cities and counties in Minnesota to alert them of this. Outlining the basic parameters of it and encouraging them to resolve anything that they can through this process. This will be their last chance, and so that they have a 2-year window to make those kinds of changes. It is possible, and there has been actually historical precedent on very limited basis for both houses of the legislature to fully agree on making an adjustment to the census count data for something like a boundary adjustment or something like that. In one case I can think of is a case of Le Sueur, where there is a bit of Le Sueur that shows up across the county line that should not actually be there, and this was something we tried to get corrected before the census, but that correction was not made. It's a process where we were submitting literally thousands of corrections, and that was one that didn't happen. And that's one that there could be general agreement that it was just simply a boundary mistake and should be readjusted. There are cases such as that are fairly straightforward. Other cases may be less straightforward, and it may not be possible to have general agreement. But it would require a general agreement between the two houses of the legislature to adjust anything in the census data.
Representative Murphy.
Then, Madam Chair, Mr. Glaspie, how long does it take for the Census Bureau to get back then and say you're absolutely correct?
Mr. Glaspie.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that will depend in part on the number of questions that are filed and the nature of those questions and frankly on the staffing situation in the Census Bureau at the time. They are committed to have the whole program finished within 2 years. So it may take a while. So it's not going to be an instantaneous process. Our experience last time was that there were some that were resolved very quickly and others that lingered on for a number of months.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, any other questions? If not, Mr. Glaspie, thanks again, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.